The following podcast is a Super Network production and spin-off of the King Zone podcast with the King Zone's Book Club podcast, hosted by Super Marcy.
We know what goes on in these parts near Jerusalem's lot.
And Stephen T. Boltz.
I love this stuff, this world building that he does with literally one sentence. Mm.
It contains adult themes.
Must either be mad or run the risk of becoming so.
Coarse language.
There are huge rats in the wall.
And potential spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Prepare to take a deep dive into the literary works of Stephen King with us. Enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome back to the King Zone's Book Club podcast, a spin-off podcast from the King Zone podcast, where we take a literary journey with the written works of Stephen King, focusing mostly on the short stories. This is episode 4, where we will be taking a deep dive into the short stories of The Cat from Hell and Man with a Belly. I am one of your lovely co-hosts, Super Marcy, so welcome. And of course, I'm joined by my very lovely and awesome co-host, Stephen T. Boltz. Hello.
Hello. Yeah, good. Good today. How are you going?
Doing well. Very keen to discuss these very interesting short stories, actually.
Yeah. This is these two are the Hitman connection.
Yes. So we're going from kind of the technology themed short stories from the previous episode to some hitmen.
Yeah, delving into King's crime fiction, the early crime fiction. Everybody's kind of surprised that he's taken this turn into crime fiction of late, like with Mr. Mercedes and Billy Summers and that sort of thing, writing, you know, all the like everything for hard case crime. Lately, like The Colorado Kid and Joyland, but he's been doing crime fiction since the early 70s with the short stories,
and these,
yeah, these are some of the examples of that. So it'd be nice to check these out.
Yes, I had heard of The Cat from Hell, as that was adapted into the Tales from the Dark Side, the movie, which was previously covered on the King Zone, but I had not read the actual short story until doing this podcast. And Man with a Belly, I had never heard of, so that was very new for me.
Yeah, that one's hard to find. Whereas Cat from Hell, I'm no authority on this, but it appears to be one of the most reprinted King short stories ever. Like, it's available anywhere. You can't go from the cab to the curb without finding a copy of The Cat from Hell. It was printed in June 1977 in Cavalier and reprinted. Well, I'm going to go into the history of this, because originally it was published. The first 500 words were published in March of 1977 in Cavalier as a contest, and readers would finish the story. So the winning entry, as well as King's complete story, because he was like, he liked the story so much, he was like, fuck it, I'll finish it, right? So he actually finished the story, and the winning entry were published in the June edition of Cavalier, June 1977. It was appeared in December 1977 issue of Gent, credited to King and Mark Rains, who I imagine was the winning entry of that, but I have no confirmation of that. King revised the story and reprinted it in collections Tales of Unknown Horror in 78, The Year's Finest Fantasy, also 78, Magic Hats, which was edited by Whitley Strieber in 1984, and again in Twists of the Tale, an anthology of cat horror in 1996, later reprinted as a bonus story in the paperback edition of Duma Key, and then finally in a King collection of short stories, his fifth, Just After Sunset. So it was all over the place, really. This story is... yeah, if you haven't read, well, honestly, Marcy, what's your excuse? Because it's all over the place, this one.
I have no excuse. That's my excuse. I saved it for doing this podcast, which I totally knew I was going to do like 37 years ago.
Now, you mentioned Tales from the Dark Side, the movie, that it showed up in there. You probably covered this when you talked about that. So forgive me if I'm repeating you or Bede. And if you want to cut this, absolutely go ahead. But it was originally supposed to show up in Creepshow 2.
I can't remember if we actually mentioned that. We might have. I honestly can't remember because it was a little while ago. But it did. It wasn't in Creepshow 2, but it got used for something else. So it was bound to show up somewhere.
Oh, that's what I mean. Like it's everywhere. It's a really insanely popular story. It got cut from Creepshow 2. There were supposed to be 5 stories in there. Pinfall was another one that got the axe. And while Michael McDowell wrote the script for the other 2 stories in Tales from the Dark Side, they sort of found a home for George's version of this one, which you will have found is kind of, it's the same up to a point, like a very faithful adaptation up to a point, and then it just goes right off the rails.
Yeah, it does.
So at this point, you usually do a synopsis. Tell us about the story.
Yes, my poorly worded synopsis of the short stories. I am no Stephen King. I'm not as eloquent as the great man. So our story, we have a professional hitman called Houston who is offered, I believe it's $12,000. To take out a very strange target. Like normally he would be like, okay, we need you to hit this dude off. But no, an old man says, I need you to take out a very, this target, it's very dangerous. As we find out, it is just a cat. But apparently this cat is responsible for 3 murders. And I don't quite think Houston knew what he was getting into by taking this job with this cat, because as the title says, the cat from hell. So this is not a very nice cat.
Halston rocks up and Drogan, old man in the wheelchair, says, Halston's like, who do you want me to hit? And he's like,
behind you.
The mark is right behind you. So he pulls his gun and he turns around and there's this cat standing there. You know, he's like, come on, man, you're kidding me. He sits down, the cat jumps up in his lap and goes to sleep, you know. And it's a weird looking cat. It's got half of its face is white and half is black, right? I imagine the rest of the cat is black. And what Drogan tells him the story about, and of course, Drogan, this story seems to me to be one of the parables, one of the few King parables. Like this is anti-animal cruelty story. Drogan is a pharmaceutical guy, and they tested his drugs on cats quite a bit. So this cat is his penance.
Yes.
In the end, right? So
especially when we find out how many cats were destroyed, I suppose you could say, during these experiments, and that's in the thousands.
Yeah, wasn't it like 15,000?
Something ridiculous. Like
yeah.
Like you're reading this, and if you love cats and animals, you were sitting there going, oh my gosh. Well, if I was a cat, I'd probably be broken too. Like, let's be real.
It's painful to think about. Yeah. It is. Yeah. So, and then he tries to justify it. But do you know how many thousands of people we saved with this drug? And Halston's not having it. Halston's cool. I liked Halston as a character. He doesn't say much. He's got some snide remarks, as basically single lines all the way through, he's very quiet. He just takes it, takes it all on board. And Drogan finishes his story. Like the cat killed his sister. He says, we have there's no proof of this. The sister is found at the bottom of the stairs. She'd broken her back and she, there was some crockery and some cat food.
Yeah.
So he reckons she got up in the middle of the night, went to feed the cat. The cat tripped her up, and she fell down the steps. Now, even if that's exactly what happened, there's no intent there. You can't prove intent.
Really, unless you were videotaping this as it happened and you saw the cat purposely trip her over, this is just an accident, really.
And that's what he's describing all the way through. The other woman that that lived with them, Carolyn Broadmore, she just dies in her sleep.
Mm.
And he assumes that that old wives' tale, the cat came in and stole her breath.
Yes.
Right. So, yes. And if I'm Halston, I've got to, you know, I've got to be thinking, okay, the old man's clearly lost it.
Yeah.
You know, this is just, he's got it out. This is yet another cat that he wants to see taken down.
Yeah.
And then Gage, his driver, is taking the cat to be put down, gets in a car accident, and Halston imagines that, you know, this is where Halston's sort of putting it together that the cat could have been responsible. That,
yeah, he starts to think a bit differently because, as he says, like, Gage had the cat scratches all over his face.
Yeah, yeah. So he's like, okay, this time he's connecting the cat definitively. Mm. But I don't know. Cats don't travel well in cars.
No, not really.
Might have just freaked out. Again, you can't prove intent.
Yeah, that's exactly the point. It's like, well, you put a cat in like a, I think, what did they say? Like a wicker basket or something.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to break out. I have traveled with cats who've gotten out of the box.
Surely.
To go to the vets. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, that's what happens. We have better transportation for them now. But cats don't like that kind of change. So you could argue the cat just didn't like being in there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. And so Halston goes, and this is where it would depart from the film version that you saw. Halston's like, great. He puts the cat in a bag and he's traveling with it and he's going to give it a respectful death. Mm. He's going to take it out. He's going to cuddle it. He's going to break its neck. He's going to give it an honorary burial and this sort of thing. You know, he respects the cat. He says cats are the hitters of the animal world, which I liked. I liked that line a lot. So, you know, Halston, he likes cats. He respects this cat. He's going to do the job. You know, and that's when he notices the cat on the dashboard.
Out of the bag, because of course it's going to get out of the bag.
Of course. Who wants to be in a plastic bag, right? So, and the cat has a go at him, starts scratching him, and Halston crashes the car off the side of the road. He is paralyzed. He's got the engine block on his legs, right? And he's momentarily paralyzed. Now, this is where you said it got really, really gross, really graphic.
Yeah,
is the word you used, graphic. So I'm gonna hand over and let you talk about what happens next.
Yeah, actually, what I liked was when the cat's there and he thinks back to that Gage story and like, oh, was this could have been what happened? Da, 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 da. So that kind of links back. But yeah, the cat is just relentless. It is attacking him in different ways. It goes for his crotch because why wouldn't you? Like, he's pretty much stuck. Like, he's thinking like, oh, my limbs are going to wake up. I'll be able to get out of this. But this cat is like, no. And it forces its way into his mouth and it goes all the way in. So if you can imagine a cat trying to fit in your mouth, which would not really fit a fully grown cat, a lot of damage would have been done. And this cat is just like, well, I'm going to do the most fucked up thing possible. And it does. It goes right down in there. It's going to destroy that man from the inside out.
And the poor farmer who sees the car in the morning dew gets there just in time to find the cat clawing its way out of
his
belly.
Way out.
And of course, this is King. I mean, this is King at his greatest. I see him sitting there just cackling madly, describing this, you know, in as much grotesque detail
it
as he
really
can
is.
Possibly muster. And he's just having such a great time writing this one. I don't know that Halston deserved all of this.
I feel like, I mean, A, he's a hitman, so he's killed people, but he doesn't seem awful. I feel like this is what should have happened to Drogon.
Yeah, sorry,
the name's wrong. I don't think Halston necessarily deserved it because he had respect for the cat, but again, this is Stephen King. Like, do we necessarily get what we want in a Stephen King story? No, you're not
exactly
really going to.
Well, and he's always said he likes to create characters that you know, that you absolutely love and adore and then kill them.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, somebody like Halston, where you're like, okay, yeah, I get this guy. I see his point of view. Yes, he's killed some people, but, you know, do you watch Barry?
I have not. No.
You've got to check out Barry. Barry is fantastic. Barry's a hitman. and he just wants to be an actor, man, you know, and you can feel it, you know. And Halston is the same way. He's like, oh man, okay, it's a cat, but I've got a job to do, you know. He's business first, and he does the thing. And story ends with, you know, the poor farmer just screaming and screaming and screaming because of what he's witnessed, in the cat taking off in the snow as though it had unfinished business. So you know Drogon's next. You know Drogon's going to get it, but it's not as satisfying as it should be. We really do. We want to see Drogon. We want to see Drogon.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of part of it, is like, you want to read about this happening. Well, you're not going to. You can put two and two together and work that out yourself.
Yeah, he yoink, he pulls that right out from under you at the end. So I like this story. I quite like this story. This is one that did take me quite a while to find. I can't remember where I read this one, actually. It had to be, I think I'm with you in this one. I don't think I found it until just after sunset. I don't think I read that one because I don't have this Cavalier. I've got a couple of... a couple of the early stories in their original publications, but I do not have the Cat from Hell. It must have been just after sunset where I read this one. You know.
Yes. Well, I only recently read it, and I really liked it. Like, it is hard to read at times, clearly, because you read very graphically how a cat goes inside somebody through their mouth. But I think it had a really interesting setup, and the way it goes, like, having actually seen that short first, I kind of had an expectation of what was, I thought, okay, this is what's going to happen. That doesn't happen. it goes in a different direction, and that sort of caught me off guard. But I was like, yeah, well, I don't feel wholly satisfied because we don't get to read about what happened to Drogon. I can only imagine it would be far worse than what happened to Halston. But no, it was really quite an interesting story, which kind of, yeah, it is like a bit of a crime story, but also it has those horror elements as well.
Yeah. I'm going to go 4 stars for this one, Marcy.
I give it 3.5 out of 5. Don't fuck with that cat myself, because it was fairly good.
Very good. The next story was disturbing in a completely different way.
Yes. I honestly did not read anything about it beforehand. I just thought, okay, I'll just read this, see what it's about. I was not expecting what happened in this story at all.
Yeah. Yeah. This one I did read early on. I read this one in high school, actually. I was going through my King phase, you know, and was buying issues of Cavalier off of a dealer in New Jersey. Guy ran a shop called the Time Tunnel, and I was buying all sorts of limited King business off of him. And I got this one, had never heard of the story, didn't know really what it was about. So it was a bit of a shocker to me, A, that it was a crime story and not a horror story, but also, the content was disturbing. This one, like I said, was published in Cavalier in December of 1988, and not reprinted really anywhere, unless you count the 2003 collection edited by Bev Vincent called, ironically, Uncollected Stories. And Scott, Cat from Hell is in there. So this would have been published before just after sunset. There's a lot of stories in there that just are not going to appear anywhere else. Squad D, which King wrote for Harlan Ellison's The Last Dangerous Vision, which never got to see the light of day. So yeah, this one is a lot harder to track down than Cat from Hell. And possibly that's a good thing, because I don't know how it fares as a story. Give us a synopsis of this one, Mars.
I was almost gonna say, I can probably see why it's so hard to find, because it is kind of messed up. So we deal with another hitman, John Bracken, and he goes to meet with a mafia don.
A don, yeah.
Corrente. He's like a man who's like in his late 70s. He's got a very young wife, and he says, well, hey, okay, I'm going to give you $50,000 to sexually assault my wife because it's punishment for, I guess, her gambling and all the other apparent horrible things she does. And he says that this deed will show him to be a man with a belly. So, I mean, it's a very weird initial setup with, hey, I want you to do this awful thing to my wife because she's a compulsive gambler. And Bracken just kind of decides to take the job, and you're just a little bit disturbed by that. And he does, he sets everything up and he does perform the deed. And once delivering the message from the Don to the wife that all debts are paid and there's honor again, the wife then decides to do something of something else. So she offers him double the money, but she wants the hitman to impregnate her so she can trick the Don into believing she's giving him an heir. So she can just, you know, she gives him something, she can still do what she wants, and she can kill him with the actual truth in her own time. So this is kind of where the story goes.
It's fucked up.
It's very messed up. I was not expecting, as I'm reading this and he's like, oh, I'm going to give you money to do this to my wife. I'm like, wait, what? And then after the assault and she's like, well, I have something for you to do. And I'm like, wait, what? No, this doesn't sound right. And the story kind of leads that, yes, the Bracken impregnated the wife. And I think it's like something like 7 months later, he gets a call, he visits the Don, who's had a few strokes, but he finds out that the wife died in childbirth, but the child is still alive. And he kind of hints that, well, this baby has blue eyes, but me and my wife have brown eyes. So there's a bit of this going on. And
Sicilians don't have blue eyes.
He says something like that. And I think Bracken ends up saying to him at the end, well, I have my own belly. And do you think I would take my own leavings?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's kind of how it ends. And it's very bizarre. Like, this is how a story ends, where Bracken, I suppose, has been found out for what he did, but I'm not quite sure what the rest of it was meant to say. And it is, it's just very messed up. So I'm not even sure what I thought of this, really. I just kind of thought this is kind of really iffy and gooey. And I suppose coming from Italian heritage, there's a lot of very racially insensitive words about Italians.
This is true. And this is true.
I didn't quite like that either. But I digress. The 70s were a bit different and people were, I mean, people are still horrible, but I guess you found a lot of this stuff, racial stereotypes and the like, just very common. Nobody really batted an eye.
They were horrible in different ways back then. I don't like Bracken, and I think maybe that's why I'm such a fan of Halston, is because in contrast, he's fucking, so you know, yeah, he's Batman compared to Bracken. Like, Bracken, he takes Norma's job, right? So he follows her home and pulls her into the woods, and when she hires him on, he takes it because he justifies that. He says they're two unrelated jobs. It's not a conflict of interest. I did the job for Corazente, now I'll do this job for her. And totally justifies it. He hangs out with her for a month at her second secret apartment that nobody knows about.
Secret apartment, right? Yeah.
And then he collects the $50,000 from Corazente, collects the $100,000 from her, and then just goes on vacation to Florida when he gets the call that Mr. Corazente wants to, you know, wants an audience. And that's when, yeah, as you said, Corazente, you know, lets him know everything that happened. He asks about Norma and learns that she died in childbirth. But then Corazente said when she ran to get help, she fell down the stairs into the living room. So there's some, I don't know if it's conflict there, or she fell down and then went into labor possibly and died. That's all very, very dicey. But now Corazente is going to die. This child is going to be left, you know, an orphan, if it even survives, because it's in a,
it's in an incubator,
right? And Bracken just goes off. He's like, fuck it. It's nothing to do with me. And walks away in the end. It's not a very upbeat story. I mean, the cat from hell, like I said, wasn't a happy ending for anybody, but it was downright Sound of Music compared to this.
Yeah, this is the thing. Like, I'm trying to work out, like, is there a point, or is he trying to say perhaps like there are these people out there that have no morals whatsoever, but justice never gets served.
Yeah.
It's very difficult, and it already kind of leaves you feeling uncomfortable when the Don gives him that initial task and you're like, well, that's fucking horrible.
Yeah, where are we going to go from here?
Yeah, and then the fact that, you know, Norma, the wife, has just been sexually assaulted brutally by Bracken, but then she turns around and's like, well, I have a job for you. Well, no. It's not how the real world works. I'm sorry. And that they then consensually see each other so she can get pregnant. And then there's all this stuff like when Bracken then later down the track sees the Don and he's like, well, I had a stroke and I did blah, blah, blah. So he's very much implying like he knows.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just, again, like what exactly was the point of it? It just left me feeling dirty and gross. So I'm all for King, like, you know, dipping into crime, no worries. But when it's kind of like this, maybe you should have only been published the once. Yeah.
Yeah, not a fan of this one. Two stars for me. 2.5. I'll go 2.5, you know, out of 5. It's no. Actually, yeah. I think about it now. I go back to 2. Yeah, 2 stars for this one.
Yeah, I think this is, a 2.5 out of 5. And I think the 2 stars, mainly, it's just for not the context or what's in there. It is very well written. So you can appreciate that aspect, but not what actually happens.
Yeah, context, not content.
Yeah, pretty much. It's very easy to see why this has not been republished or it's very hard to find.
Yeah, absolutely. Or filmed. You know,
I mean, I couldn't imagine how could you do this as a short story, a short film, or anything. No way. You'd have to make quite a lot of changes, I think, and then it would be so far removed from what it is.
Yeah, it'd be a Lawnmower Man. You can't, I think you'd have a hard time finding an audience for this one.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I'm glad I've read it. So I've read this very obscure story, but also not glad I read it because it made me feel very icky. But always worth a discussion, even if we didn't particularly like something. It's always worth a discussion.
Opens up the discussion, absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And that probably brings up a wrap for episode 4 of the King Zones Book Club podcast.
One of our shortest episodes.
It is a bit of a shorter episode, but I think, do we really want to drone on about
I don't want to say too much more about Man with a Belly. No. No,
I mean, absolutely. we could sort of end the show on, does Stephen King like or dislike cats? What is your takeaway from all the cat-related Stephen King
stories? Oh, wow, yeah. Because poor Winston Churchill really literally goes to hell and back in Pet Sematary. But then there's Cat's Eye. The cat's a hero. Mm-hmm. The cat's a hero.
The cat is a hero, yeah.
And in all honesty, the cat from hell, that cat's kind of a hero. I think he likes cats. I think he's pro cat. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think he is pro cat. And I think the inclusion of cats, which we see several times, I think it is something he's fascinated with because they are a very unique animal and they have especially domesticated cats with their own attitudes. So I think he has a lot of respect for cats.
I think that's it. Not whether he likes them or not, he respects them.
I feel like he's like Halston, that he has a respect for the cat.
Yeah.
I think there was a bit of King in there.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah. But yes, it is a running theme in the works of Stephen King with the cats. But Steve, tell everybody what they can look forward to if they want to pre-read the stories before we talk about them for episode 5, which hopefully will be out in about 4 to 5 weeks from this episode's publish date.
We are going back to vampires, Mars.
Ooh.
Vampires. Intriguing. Yes, we're going to look at The Night Flyer and a follow-up story to that, which King has stated is a sequel, Popsy. So we'll look at both of those stories next time.
Very, very exciting, as I absolutely love the film of the Night Flyer, and it has been covered on this show, as well as Bede and I being guests on the Schlock and Awe podcast, where we teamed up the Night Flyer with Nightcrawler for a very interesting double feature that's kind of messed up, but very good.
They're both about sleazy reporters.
Yeah, like they work so well as a double. So yeah, a bit of a shout out to those. And yeah, I haven't read the short story, so it's very exciting for me for what's coming up for episode number 5.
Okay. All right. Cool. Cool. We'll do that, and we'll catch you then.
Yes, we'll see everybody very soon. And of course, you can check out our podcast if you look up the name of the podcast in your podcast player or the King Zone. It'll surely show up. And you can find us at supermarcy.com, and everything will be in the show notes or on the website, so you won't miss out on anything there. And if you want to say hello, I'm on Twitter at twitter.com/supermarcy, or you can just keep up to date with me on Letterboxd at super_Marcy on Letterboxd. And I think you have a Letterboxd also, Steve.
Yeah, you can check me out also at Letterboxd, letterboxd.com/FulciRama.
Fulcirama.
Yes.
See, there's, I think, a bit of a missed opportunity, because Fulci and King would have been...
Oh, can you imagine? What?
Like, what?
What King story would you like to have seen Lucio Fulci take over?
You know what? I think maybe the only person who could have adapted Man with a Belly would have been Lucio Fulci. I'm going to say it right now.
Excellent. Let's leave it at that.
We would have made that work. And with that said, everybody, we'll catch you on the other side of the King Zone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Super Network is proudly sponsored by Surfshark VPN. Why would you have a VPN in this day and age? Well, a lot of people are quite concerned about tracking and their online privacy, and using a VPN ensures that you are safe and secure online. Surfshark VPN provides a lot of extra added layers of security, as well as ad blocker and a kill switch if your information is ever compromised. A great bonus feature with having Surfshark is something is not available on your streaming service in your country. You just pop on that Surfshark VPN and you can probably find so much more streaming in different countries. If you want to find something like Masters of Horror, it is available on Tubi, so just select the correct country and you'll be able to watch such a great and fantastic show. Surfshark VPN is one of the most reliable and cheapest of the VPNs out there, with up to 81% off offer when you subscribe for 24 months. Please use the link surfshark.deals/supernetwork to take advantage of this amazing deal. You can also find the link in the show notes. Thank you, Surfshark. Surfy shark, do 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 do. Surfy shark, do 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 do. And now back to the show.